Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of In the Crease with Danny and Kevin, a coast-to-coast discussion of D2 men's lacrosse. I'm your co-host, Kevin Stenstrom, and with me, as always, is the Ricky Ricardo of the In the Crease podcast, Danny Moran. Hey, Danny.
Lucy, I'm home.
So you remember the show. Now, so let's just do some disclaimers here for everyone. When we saw that show as kids, it was already in reruns. Let's not put us like we were watching it when it came out.
You're right.
Prime That's time, right. Right.
Yep.
But it
yep.
was all yep. over. Right. And you remember what Ricky used to say in a Cuban accent, right? Lucy, you have a lot of splaining to do.
Yep.
I think your line tonight, since we missed an episode last week, is Kevin, you have a lot of splaining to do.
Yeah, well, you know, we missed a week, unfortunately, but, yeah. You know, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Yeah, we'll get through it.
I'll just explain this as we kind of put it out there. It was my family emergency. It was my mom, 92. I had a stroke. She's now in rehab facility trying to get her strength back. It was interesting, Danny. I actually brought my podcast equipment down with me, brought my mic, brought my mixer, had my laptop. It was just way too much going on with family and my mom. I just couldn't do it. So,
Kevin, family is more important than anything else. And especially your mom, you know, when it comes to moms, sons are,
well, you and I talked about this last night when we talked, right? And you're right. 92, she's lived a good life, but I don't care who you are and what age your mom is, you're never ready. Luckily, my mom is doing well, but you know, when I went and saw her, you're just never ready.
Yeah. You know, I lost my mother in 2009. Unfortunately, she went in for a biopsy and never came home. She wound up getting every hospital borne infection that you could, and she just deteriorated, you know, within 70 days. It was just such a sad thing. Yeah. And just last week was her birthday. Her birthday is five days in front of mine. My birthday is tomorrow. So we always
happy birthday, Mr. Moran. Well, everyone at In the Crease, all the staff at In the Crease wish you a happy birthday.
Both of them.
That's right. And one of them too. That.
Dude, 62, and I feel like I'm 22. I act like I'm 15.
That's right.
You know, I'm lucky. I'm on no medications, and I drink my water. I try to eat my vegetables. I'm trying to eat a little bit more fruit. I usually don't eat much fruit in the winter, but I'm trying to now, you know, geez, in the spring.
My wife just eats fruit. That's her go-to. She's always eating fruit, which I don't, and she's really good at it. It's just great. That's great that you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm trying. I want to stay around. I want to stay healthy, you know. But like I said, last week was my mom's birthday. And you know what? Again, a son and his mom, there's nothing like that bond. I don't care. You know, I've heard the father-daughter thing, but the son-mother bond is really, really strong. And you know what? I still can't hear, like, I can't listen to Lou Rawls anymore, because as soon as Lou Rawls comes on, I think of my mother. She loved him. You know what I mean?
The tears start flowing.
Yeah. And you know what? Even at 62, I miss my mother terribly.
I bet.
And you know what? And I wish your mother a speedy recovery. She seems to be doing a lot better.
And she's getting there. Long road. Long road as a 92-year-old. But hopefully we'll get there, and she won't have any setbacks.
But I have to say, God bless, man. I know. God bless.
And when she had this, she tripped is what started this whole thing. But when she's in the hospital, everyone's saying, well, she's 92. Of course, she probably has lots of falls. No, she was in such great shape before this happened that people wouldn't believe that she was 92. So she's been blessed. We've been blessed. And we hope that continues for a while. But so let's move on, though. I have more explaining to do, Danny. Unfortunately, I've got more. I got more. We have no player spotlight tonight. I swear to God, I think you need to fire the producer. Oh, but then you'd be down to one on the staff if you did that.
No, we can't do that.
So it was the player we were supposed to have on last week. He was very gracious when I told him we couldn't do it. There was some miscommunication this week. Just he didn't really see my emails coming to him. His family is in town, and he comes from Canada. Okay, he's from British Columbia. And his family's in town for senior night tomorrow at their game, at his game. So, you know, got Makes like sense. You said that, like you said, family's the most important thing.
Yep.
I said, go have fun with your family. We'll figure it out. We'll have it on another episode coming down the road. But, you know, I've not been firing on all cylinders with my producer role here lately.
Hey, you know what? Again, things come up, Kev, that we can't control. And the good Lord said, you know, control the things you can and try not to worry about the things you can't control That's too right. much.
The fact, yeah.
You know, our player that we were going to have is Eric Dozy from Chouan. He's, if you look at the numbers, this
oh
young
my
man
gosh.
Is putting up. If he's not a first-team All-American, I don't know what is. But we'll get
match
to
him with Eric George on their team, who we had on last year. Eric Dozy, by the way, and we'll mention this when we have him on, he crossed 100 career assists. He was the first Chouan player to have 100 career assists.
Yeah, he's got 106 in his career. Yeah. He's got 86 goals, 106, 192 points. And
yeah.
And a really cool is 26 ground balls, man.
Yeah.
Like that's in his career. He's currently sixth in the country in goals per game, averaging over 3.5, almost 3.67 goals a game. He's second in the country in assists. In 9 games, he's got 30 assists, and he leads the country in points, Kevin, averaging 7 points a game. So Eric's doing a phenomenal job to show on.
We're really looking forward to having him on.
Love to. I can't wait to have him on.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we need to move on. Let's talk a little bit more about lacrosse in general. Do you want to give the top 10 roundup?
Right, Kev. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your
top 10 roundup.
All right, Kev, here we go. A lot went on this week, Kevin. We missed an episode, so there's a couple of games that played. Number one, Limestone had a good week. They just continue to roll on and roll on. They beat Newberry, number 10, Newberry, 20-12. Pretty good beat down. And they beat Anderson, 19-12. Number two, Lenoir Rhine beat number 8, Wingate, 12-7 in a good game. And they beat Mars Hill 25-5. Number 3, Tampa had a really good week. They beat number 6, Rollins, 16-11. And they beat number 14, Florida Southern, 12-8.
Yeah, but remember, too, that Rollins, when they played him, was number 2 in the country.
That's right. That's right. So, all right. Anyway, they had a really good game. They beat him.
I got you out of your rhythm.
They beat them. All right, number 4, the Adelphi, the Panthers. They beat St. Mike's 21-6 and beat number 9, Pace, 12-6 in any 10 action, Kev. Number 5, the Mercy Mavs beat UDC, 22-2. But UDC, you know, they're a young program and not a lot of numbers, so Mercy put a beat down on them. And they also beat St. Thomas Aquinas 21-2, so they put up 43 points and only let up 4 goals in 2 games. Pretty impressive. Number 6, Rollins lost to number 3, Tampa, and then beat Florida Tech 18-10. Number 7, UIndy was upset when they lost to unranked Rockhurst 9-8 in overtime. Number 8, Wingate lost to number 2, LR 12-7, but beat Catawba and LMU. They had 3 games this week. They beat Catawba 19-6 and beat LMU rather handily 23-3. Number 9, Pace beat Franklin Pierce 19-8, but they lost to number 4, Adelphi 12-6. And number 10, Newberry lost to number 1, Limestone 20-12 and beat Coker 21-4. And that's your
top 10 roundup.
And Kev, I just got a couple of quick scores from note. Colorado Mesa in RMAC beat Westminster 13-12 in overtime. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit. Number 18, Frostburg beat Malloy by one. 12-11, those pesky Lions from Long Island. They're pesky. You know, they got a couple of losses, but you're not beating up on Malloy too much. Emory Riddle won two this week, beating Lynn 17-11 and then upsetting Florida Southern 15-14 in overtime. We'll talk about that game. St. A's beat Bentley pretty bad.
We'll get into that one.
And we'll get into that one. So that's what we got so far this week.
That's a great rundown, Danny. Let's go to the week in review. Now, we missed a week, so we're really not going to do 2 weeks in review because we'd be here till tomorrow recording this. But can you just hit on some of the big games you saw from the week we missed?
Sure. Well, I went and attended the LR Wingate game two Saturdays ago. I was down there in Wingate, North Carolina. Quite the game, Kev. Quite the game. You know, two heavyweights going at it. It was at Wingate. It was 3-2 after one or 2-1 or something like that. I mean, it was a close game pretty much. First quarter, second quarter, Lenore Ryan went on like a little 4-goal run. It was like a 4-minute lapse of defense, a lack of whatever it was.
Yeah.
Lenore Ryan was coming, initiating for Max, wrap around, get to GLE and shoot that, you know, high degree of angle, that high degree of difficulty angle shot.
Yeah.
And some of these shots were going in and they were amazing shots to get in because the window was so small, but Lenore Ryan's a really good offensive team.
Yeah.
And then after that, Kev, it was quite the battle. I mean, these two teams are both great defensively and great offensively. Where Wingate struggled was at the dot. Matt Mancini for Lenore Ryan was over 80%. So Wingate did not have the ball very often. You know, they seemed like they were on defense all day. But one thing I liked about what I saw about Wingate was, you know, when they did get the ball, they were very patient and worked their offense and was able to get shots off. And they actually started chipping back a little bit. But that little 4-goal, 4-minute lapse in that second quarter was just enough
to
keep Lenore Ryan ahead.
We've seen that in several games. In fact, there's a game or two that this past week that we'll get into that's exactly what happened again. It's tough when you play a team of the caliber of LR. It's tough to make up that 4 or 5 goal deficit. Now, a team like Wingate, they've got the team to do it, but you know, LR's defense is top notch too. So yeah, you're right. When you get it's a tough road to come back that many goals to a team like Lenore Ryan.
And you know what? I got to be honest. Like the Bulldogs were very, very patient. You know, like a team, you know, sometimes when they get down, they want to rush through. They want to get, you know, they just want to get that goal back. They just got to get that goal back. They got to get it back. And Wingate didn't do that. They worked the offense. They you know, and they had their opportunities. Mr. Pensapenny in goal, Kevin, he's really, really good, man.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. He stopped a breakaway fast break goal, one-on-one, stopped the goal. I mean, and then there was two doorstep stops that he made. I mean, that's three goals that he stopped that most goalies in the country don't make.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know what, Lenore Ryan added an empty netter at the end of the game. I don't count that. You know, it was an empty netter. There was 7 seconds left in regulation and gave him that fifth goal. But, you know, Lenore Ryan had two EMOs. Wingate had one EMO. I mean, 6-on-6, it was a pretty tight game. You know what I mean? So those guys, I have a feeling, are going to meet again in the SAC tournament.
Yeah. Yeah,
everything goes right in the SAC the way I see it right now. It'd be Limestone 1, LR 2, Wingate 3, and then Newberry 4. And then you got 5 and 6. You know, who's going to be? Is it going to be Anderson? It could be, you know. And that would mean, you know, the Bulldogs would probably have to play in the first round. It would be the higher seed. They would host, and then they'd have to play the number two team, which would probably be Lenore Ryan.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling these two are going to meet up again.
Yeah, I see that. All right. Any other games?
Well, let's see. I mean, we can talk about Tampa, the Rollins game. Did you want to go over
that? Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. That's probably the other really big one. That was actually, I think that was our game of the week. So let's talk about that one.
Yeah, number three, Tampa beat Rollins. Number five, they were number five when they played. So Rollins has been going up and down the rankings the last couple of weeks. Like Wingate, they've been going up and down the last couple of weeks as well. It was 16-11. You know, I just think that from watching this game, you know, Tampa led 10-4 at halftime. They really like poured it on. It was like,
yeah.
I just felt that Rollins could not get into their offensive mojo. I don't know. Did you watch the game?
I didn't. I saw the score 10-4, and it really surprised me that it was that much of a gap. And the same thing. You just talked about it with Lenore Ryan and Wingate, right? And this is even more a gap. This is a 6-goal differential that they've got to come back from. That's tough against a team like Tampa.
Yeah, you know, Tampa's looking pretty good, man, lately. Yeah. I mean, they're looking really good. Their defense is starting to sharpen up. They're still giving up a lot of double digits. You know, they're giving up 10, 11 goals a game, which I know JB would love to get that under 10, you know, but they're giving up those goals, but they're scoring. I mean, Tampa to me right now, this is my notes. This is what I said. Rollins just couldn't find this offensive mojo. Tampa is a great team, high IQ, well-coached, team that has a legitimate shot to get to the national championship. Can the defense hold up? Can the defense hold up? That's my whole thing. I think Luka Mercado in goal, he gives up goals, you know? But Tampa outscores most of the other teams.
Right.
You know, but Mercado gives up goals. And then I think there's times when he could wish that he could get some of those back. You know what I'm saying? Tampa was 9-29 on the faceoffs. Rollins was 10-29. Tampa had 50 shots to Rollins, 35. Ground balls, Tampa ruled. They had 33 ground balls to Rollins' 14. Tampa was 14 out of 15 for the clear. Rollins struggled a little bit clear, and they were only 17-22. Tampa was 0-1 on the EMO, and Rollins was 1 out of 3. For the Tampa, Jackson Backshaw had 3. Charlie Bolish had 3. Nick Papa, Owen Miller had 2 goals apiece. And then Palma Sanchez, Andrew Milani, and even Matthew Beto scored a goal, the long pole. They were just dominant. For Rollins, the same guys, Jack Johnstone, he's a really good player, man. He's tough, man. He had 3-1, Grant Hansen and Bolera and Charlie Metz, Logan Myers, William Metz's brother, Caracciolo, Sam Mattson, and they all had a goal apiece. Khachaturian had 11 saves, but Tampa just looked better. They looked better to me. They looked like a better team. They just were sharp, strong, moving quickly, guys moving without the ball. The defense played pretty well. And I don't know, man. Tampa looks good to me. They got a legitimate shot to get to the Natty, Kev.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we move on to the games from last week? And let me start off with the one that was on Friday. Top 10 matchup, any 10 matchup, Pace against Adelphi. Adelphi wins 12-6. And let me tell you, Danny, I think, in my humble opinion, Dylan Renner was the difference in this game. Even though it was a 6-goal difference, he made several doorstep saves to really kind of stop the momentum on the set side. Like, not only stop the momentum, like if they got that goal, they're inching closer, and he shut it down. And then what does that do when he does that so many times from just a morale standpoint? He had a season high 15 saves and was at a 71% save percentage for that game.
Yeah. You know what? Adelphi's defense was really good in this game.
Yes.
You know, this year, I think their defense has been their Achilles heel a little bit. I mean, offensively, they're good. They're going to score, you know, Logan Tucker.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They've got boys that can score.
Hall,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they got boys that can score and play hard and play aggressive, you know, but the defense to me has been a little suspect. They've had Dylan Renner. They've been relying on Dylan Renner, I think, a lot. And the defense really played well against Pace. They forced Pace into shot clock violations. They forced them to go deep into the clock. Pace was having trouble getting decent looks. You know, Adelphi was getting sticks on sticks and stuff like that. Again on Adelphi as well, they do struggle at the dot. They do struggle.
Yep. Yeah, well, that showed again because Pace won the faceoff battle. They had 14 faceoffs to Adelphi's 8. The other thing is Pace won the ground ball battle 43 to 26. So you'd think with those kind of stats that the game would have been closer. And you're right. This defense was great. But I think Dylan Renner was the extra difference to really keep Pace at bay. Interestingly, I turned the game on when it was already 6-1. Adelphi scored 3 goals in the first 4 minutes of the game and then added 3 more in that first quarter before Pace even scored. So we talked about a run by Lenoir Ryan in the second. Adelphi had the run in the first, up by 5, uphill battle from there for Pace.
Yeah, again, I got to give all the credit to, you know, that Panther defense was really good, man. They were very good, like I said, forcing them deep into the clock, you know, just sliding, making good, just they played really solid, a really solid game. I think that might have been Adelphi's best all-around game so far, because I've watched them play that 5 times already, 6 times.
I think you're right. I think you're right, especially because Pace is a very, very, very good team, and their offense is very good with really guys like good. Kemp and Xavier. They are very good, and to be able to shut Xavier down to 1 goal? Yeah. I mean,
don't forget, Danny's only a sophomore, you know? He's still learning, but he's good, man. He's a big boy.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Adelphi, Kyle Steinbeck, 3 goals. First game back for him. Remember, we thought he wasn't coming back, and he even DM'd was like, I'm coming back, boys, can't wait.
Right.
And now this is his first game back. So hats off to him. First game back, 3 goals against a team like Pace. Logan Tucker, 2 goals, 2 assists. Eamon Hall, 2 goals, 1 assist. And Braden Donnellan, 2 goals, 1 assist. On the Pace side, Ryan Kemp had 2 goals and 1 assist. So, and then several guys had 1 goal for them. So it was Adelphi, just like I said, a lot of players had some good stats on the offensive side, but we talked about, I think the defense was the difference there. All right. I've got 2 Peach Belt games I want to talk about. One more in specific because I got to watch the whole thing, and that's Flagler UAH, Alabama Huntsville. Did you watch any of that game?
I did not.
Danny, Alabama Huntsville wins this 17-15, and it was somewhat of a game of runs once again. Flagler in the first quarter was not winning faceoffs, and they had no answers for the Charger Cutters early on. And UAH went up 4-1 with 5:09 left in the first. Flagler gets 2 goals back, and it's 5-3 after 1. And then it's 9-8 Flagler at half. So Flagler comes back. They keep the momentum after 3. They're up 13-11. You're like, okay, this is usually what we see. This is right. What I expected. Yep. I thought Flagler was going to win, even though I knew Alabama Huntsville has a very good team. UAH scores 5 goals in a row in the fourth to go up 16-13 with 6:01 left. And there were some great goals. Jake Schramm for UAH with a great diving goal to give UAH this lead. I mean, it was Sports Center top 10 type of goal. It was really, really good.
Cool.
And at that time, Flagler only had 2 offensive possessions in the fourth by 6 minutes. 2 offensive possessions. But, you know, they fight back. They get it within 2 with 2:29 left. But Alabama Huntsville wins the faceoff, and Schramm finds Pete Fabrizio with 1:24 left to make it 17-14 and go back up by 3. McCousis scores a BTB from Trace McDonald pass to cut it to 17-15 with 54 seconds left. This is when it gets even more interesting. You're like, okay, maybe there's a chance UAH gets two 30-second penalties with 44 seconds left.
Okay.
So Flagler's up 6-4, you know, in personnel on the man up, but they couldn't deliver. And let me tell you, it got chippy out there. It was chippy. This is a Peach Belt game that both teams wanted. First game in conference play. But UAH, they pulled it out. I think the difference may have been shots on goal. UAH had seven more than Flagler, 28-21. And the reason why I say that is Flagler's goalie, Nate Lair, had 11 saves to Tommy Pierce's six.
Yeah, how many shots on goal? How many shots did he face?
So that's what I'm saying. Shots on goal, he faced 28 versus the 21 for just enough of a volume above.
Right.
To make that 17-15 difference.
Flagler's a scrappy squad, man. They're scrappy.
But tell you
what, they're gonna meet again in the Peach Belt tournament.
But so that's what's funny. I would have picked, if we were picking last week, I would have picked Flagler for this game. And this next game, Montevallo against Lander, I would have picked Lander. Montevallo wins 19-16.
I wouldn't have guessed that either. I probably would have picked Lander as well.
They went up big, Danny, in this game and held on. Montevallo scored five goals in each of the first three quarters to go up 15-7. 15-7 against Lander.
Yeah, it's tough to dig yourself out of that one.
Lander scores nine goals in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my Lord.
But the Falcons.
I love these Peach Belt games.
I'm telling you, the Falcons scored four in the fourth. That's all they needed to do.
Yep.
What a game.
Yeah.
And wow. Get some of these stats. So turnovers. Lander had 15. Montevallo had 33. And there was quarter. I think it was the fourth quarter where Montevallo just had a whole bunch of them. But faceoffs, talk about making the difference. You flip it now. Lander had eight faceoff wins to Montevallo's 30. So, I mean, those are the two things that almost make it. And the game's 19-16. So those are they even each other out on those stats. Crazy stats when you look at the difference in them.
Those are crazy stats for sure.
Montevallo, Zach LaBarge had five goals. Matthew Boas had four goals. Trevane Hunter, three goals, four assists. Nice days. And then Lander, Kyle DiCrispino, had seven goals and one assist. On the day, he had five goals in the fourth quarter.
That's quite the day.
I'll tell you the battles that these four teams, we talked about this in the conference preview, shorter leaves this year from the Peach Belt. They're down to four teams in the Peach Belt Conference. These four teams, every game, conference game, you've got to watch.
Yeah, it means so much to them. It really means much. What's going to happen next year, you know? Or what are they going to have to do if they go to automatic qualifiers?
They won't get an automatic qualifier. They're going to have to get two other teams in their conference to get an automatic qualifier. Or they join all go another to Peach conference. Belt. Yeah. So
or join another
I would conference. Love to say see the Peach Belt stay and they Me find too. Some other teams. I think that would be awesome because it's just, we talk about it all the time. You know, these teams, they're not at the Adelphi, Lenoir, Rhine level. They're probably even maybe a step or two below that. But when they play each other, it is damn good lacrosse. It is tough lacrosse. It is scrappy lacrosse. No team wants to lose. And you see that in most conferences. But when you got these four teams are so close to each other in play and ability, it's just don't know what's going to happen.
I couldn't agree with you more. When you said, you know what, they're competitive. It's competitive lacrosse. They're getting after it. Yeah, they may not be at the same level as the Tampas and the Limestones of the world and the Adelphis of the world, but they still play damn good lacrosse. And those games mean a lot to these kids.
It
and
is
especially,
awesome.
Especially conference games, Kev. Yeah. Conference games mean a lot. So you know what? And it means a lot to every conference team. And they go out, they want to win that, and, at least that conference game.
And their fans at these Peach Belt games are fantastic.
Yeah. We've been watching the Peach Belt since its inception. And yeah. I remember the first championship game, how many people there, and they were screaming and going nuts. And
yeah,
they love their lacrosse down there. They really, really do. You know what? I would love to see the Peach Belt stay around. These four teams, they're like really close together as far as talent is concerned and coaching. And they're really, the parity in that conference is amazing.
Can you imagine them at a tournament, one coach each from the Peach Belt all going for the same guy, same few guys to try to recruit? Not that it totally happens, but I could just see that.
It happens all the time. Who gets to that kid first, you know? Yeah. You know? Who gets that biggest piece of pie, you know what I'm saying? But you know what? They're all friends. They all, you know, they talk to each other.
And they support each other. Yes, they do. Yeah. Yes,
you know, they support each other down there, and it's just, I love the conference. Again, I just hope it stays around, and I love watching Peach Belt competition. They really do get after it. It's really competitive lacrosse, like you said.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to another conference, and another conference I think could be somewhat of a crapshoot of who wins it, especially after you saw how this game ended, and that's the GLVC and UIndy against Rockhurst. Rockhurst pulls it out in overtime, 9-8.
Upset alert.
I'm telling people right now, if you only have a few minutes to watch a game, go on GLVC Network, find this on demand, go to the last 3 minutes of the game. Yeah. It'll switch as far as momentum in a minute and a half.
I watched this game. I thought it was a really, really well-played game by both teams.
Yep.
I felt it was a defensive battle. Both defenses played very, very well, made it difficult for both teams to score goals. It was a low-scoring game, 9-8. It went into overtime. It was a barn burner, as we like to say. You know,
It was.
You know, it's GLVC action, and, you know, we haven't spoke much about Rockhurst at all.
No. And here's my last note I wrote in here. Danny, they're a very quiet 9-2.
And 5-0 in GLVC.
They lost their first two games. Well, 3-0 in conference games. They played two others, but 3-0 technically in conference. They lost their first two games to Tampa and St. Leo, and then they went on a 9-1. Nine game straight winning streak.
But lost since, no.
Crazy. Yeah. But and here's what's in it. Here's what's interesting about this. I actually was watching this game. I was watching the St. A's Bentley game, and I had this one on my tablet on the side, and I'm watching both going back and forth, and I'm seeing this game go back and forth as far as who's in the lead, who's not. You know, Rockhurst led at half 3-2, and then UIndy answers, and they're up 5-4 after three. And then you see, I saw that UIndy was up by two with 1:36 left. They were up 8-6. And I'm like, okay, I don't need to watch that game anymore. It wasn't until the next day, Danny, that I realized Rockhurst scores two goals. One at like 55 seconds, and then another one with 2 seconds left to tie the ball game and go to overtime. And that second goal, so Rockhurst scores with 51 seconds left to get it within one. They win the ensuing faceoff, but they turn the ball over after the clear with a loose ball. Player just kind of lost control of the ball. UIndy picks it up, but then Casey Carlson's low pass is not picked up by the defender, and Rockhurst gets it back out of bounds. They call timeout. 7 seconds left. Hawks call timeout. Ricky Bloom brings it in. from the left wing, and no one really picks him up. And he scores about 12 yards out with 2 seconds left.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you go to overtime. Rockhurst wins the faceoff, and McConnell shoots the game winner in a transition unsettled goal. I never would have expected UIndy, especially after a defensive battle as it was, to be that out of position on defense. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I'm not an X and O's guy, but like, it's almost like in psychologically, you're like, oh crap. They got, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the momentum was on Rockhurst's side.
Yeah, pretty much. But there was like a 5 minute period in that fourth quarter where UIndy, the momentum went to them. And when Tristan Schaefer buried one, and they led by two, the Greyhounds led by two with a minute and 36. I was like, okay, this is a big face off. This is a big face off. Rockhurst won the face off. Who won that face off? And Nate Adamson buried it. And we were tied like, what just happened here? You know, it was a pretty good ending. Jonah McConnell for Rockhurst, 4 goals and the game winner Linus Toward. We talked about him last week, 2 goals of Ricky Bloom, Nate Adamson, Tyler Smith, each added one. For UIndy, Justin Williams had 2 goals and an assist. Nathan Lamb had 2 goals and an assist. Tristan Schaefer had 1 and 1. Dylan Braddock, Owen Braddock, each added one. 39 shots to 39 shots.
Yeah.
18 turnovers to 19 turnovers.
Dead even stats, practically.
9 cost turnovers to 5 cost turnovers. 12 faceoff wins for Rockhurst, 9 faceoff wins for UIndy. EMOs, Rockhurst, big 2 for UIndy. 35 ground balls for Rockhurst to 30. I mean, talk about as even a game as you could possibly get.
And then look at the goalie play. The goalie play: Brock Oliela, 14 saves, 8 goals against, and Casey Carlson, 12 saves, 9 goals against. Both had really good games, above 50%, well above 50%.
Tell you, man, Casey Carlson might have a shot at like an All-American this year. He just plays really well. He's been very impressive to me this year. Yeah,
but Brock Oliela was pretty damn impressive in that game too.
Hey, Rockhurst is undefeated in GLVC right now, and they're gonna be the one seed for that tournament.
Well, we'll see. That's what I'm saying.
Something crazy happened.
They have not played Lewis or Maryville yet. And Maryville has, you know, both those teams have to play Rockhurst too. It's really interesting. That's why I find this is going to come down to the wire, I think, in seeding for the tournament.
And UIndy, you know, losing that game, you know, might hurt them in Southern Region play
come
NCAA time.
Yep.
You know, because they were on a little roll there. They were looking good. They were playing well. We didn't give them much credence in the beginning of the season, you know. And
they were proving us wrong?
Yeah. And they've been playing well like the last month or so. They really played well. I feel like Carlson in goal is really playing phenomenal, lights out. And this was a surprising win to me.
And I was
surprised.
We have never spoken to Coach Kevin Kelly, but I am sure he wants to remain deadly silent as a team. Let no one think what they can do. They're 9-2.
Yeah. Yeah, man. 9-2. It's impressive, Rockhurst. I mean, love it. And with that win over UIndy, man, that's a big win for Rockhurst.
It is. Remember, they were co-champions, and they won it last year. They were co-champions for the season. So we should not expect it from them. I just thought it was so tough when we were going through it. Who did they lose? It was tough to tell. A lot of turnover, but they have a big roster. Guys are stepping up.
Yeah.
All right.
Good for Rockhurst. Good game, guys. Good game.
Another great game. Another overtime game. Florida Southern, Emory Riddle. Florida, Emory Riddle pulls it out 15-14 in overtime. Coach Another Jess. One where they had to come from behind. Did you watch this game?
I watched a little bit of it. Yeah, I caught like the end of it.
So Florida Southern was outscored by Emory Riddle 6-1 in the second quarter, but then they flip it around in the third and they score 7 goals to Emory Riddle's 1. It was 12-9 after 3, Florida Southern. And then Isaiah Hines of Emory Riddle strikes first blood in the fourth to inch closer to make it 12-10. But the Mocs answer to keep the 3-goal lead with 12-11 left. They trade goals, and then Emory Riddle gets it within 1. They score 2 in 1 minute 10 seconds to get within 1. And then there's an unsettled goal to tie it in the end. And so then they go to overtime. So they were down with a few minutes left, 3 goals, and they score 3 to bring it to overtime. And then Emory Riddle starts with possession in overtime, but after a few wide shot attempts, the shot is saved. Florida Southern gets their chance. They clear the ball. Coach Ward calls timeout. But after the timeout, the Mocs turn it over with 2:37 left. And then Emory Riddle brings it down, and Pete Abbas scores from the right wing to give them their first ever win against Florida Southern.
Yeah. Hey, Emory Riddle, Coach Jez had those boys very poised.
Yes.
They were very poised. They didn't get crazy when they were losing. They kind of just kept chipping at that stone, playing solid lacrosse, just playing high IQ lacrosse, Kev. That coach has done wonders there in a very, couple of weeks, really.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, come on. What, look at what Emory Riddle has done since Coach Jez has been there. I mean, he lost to Anderson and Flagler in the beginning of the season, and he lost to Belmont Abbey by 1.
Yeah, everybody, like else. I said, if you watch, they're on a new trajectory. I think it's starting to, I wouldn't even say buy into him. I think the players probably bought into him quickly, but it's just understanding what he's doing. And I think part of it is like what you said, keeping their poise in a game like this. Florida Southern is a damn good team.
Really good team.
They've got a lot of weapons. Michael Simone in goal. They've got Ryan Robichaud. They've got everything on offense and defense. Jacob Chiz at faceoff X. Yeah. I mean, they've got everything they need, and they just stuck with them. But here's what's interesting. Flip this around. We always talk about Mercy being the cardiac kids. The Mocs are the cardiac kids of the South, Danny. They have 5 1-goal games this season, starting with their win over Wingate, first game of the season.
Right.
2 of those games were in overtime. It's just crazy.
Coach Ward's getting some gray hairs, man. Yeah. Getting some gray hairs. No one likes them 1-goal win with those coaches, man. It plays on them, man. It takes a little piece of their life away. But, you know, like, again, you said Florida Southern's a great team. But what I saw out of Emory Riddle, I saw a team that, you know, personified their coach a little bit. Looked like they'd been there. They kind of played poised.
Yeah.
Didn't play rushed. Didn't, you know, try to do things that they couldn't do when they got down. They just kept chipping away at that stone. And you know what? Isaiah Hines, he's a really good player for Emory Riddle. He had 5 goals and 3 assists. Coleman Jacobs had 4-2. He had a really good game. Pete Abbas had 3-1. Christian Hoffer, 2-2. Reedka, 6 saves. And Gerringer came in the second half. And they switched goalies in the second half, and he had 5 saves. He let one in right away, and then he was, like, really good for the rest of the game. Frankie Morrissey, 11-for-31 at the faceoff dot. For Florida Southern, Tommy Frank had 4 goals. Bryden Robichaud, 2-3. Caleb Cook, 2-1. Brendan Glasser, 2-0. Guillermo, Nolan Ty, McClusker, each added 1. Mikey Simone, like you said, 8 saves. Out of 23 shots on goal. It's pretty good. That's a pretty good day. Jacob Chiz was phenomenal again, 18-for-21 at the dot. And Luke Hendrickson was 4-from-11. They combined So Florida Southern loses a tough one, and Emory Riddle seems to be trending upwards, and they go to 2-0 in conference play.
So now you look at teams in Sunshine State like Emory Riddle and Florida Southern, not Florida Southern, Emory Riddle and St. Leo. Yep. Playing teams like Florida Southern and the other big boys, Florida Tech, yeah, Rollins, Tampa. Can they do some upsets? Are they going to get in the tournament? It's really interesting. It's another
Emory Riddle faces the gauntlet now.
Yeah.
Because they have Tampa coming up, Florida Tech, Rollins, and St. Leo. So three out of the next four games are all ranked opponents.
Yeah.
So if they can be competitive and get one out of those,
Right. Right. I think that's what they want to see. They want to make these games close. Give themselves a chance, just like they did against Florida Southern.
I'd like to see them play against that St. Leo team. That's going to be,
that'll be a good game.
Emory Riddle and St. Leo.
Yeah.
Because I think they're both vying for the same spot in that Sunshine State Conference tournament. So,
I like what
Jez is doing there, man. I like what he's doing there. Now the thing is, how are you going to get recruit? Because you're going to need a special kind of player at Emory Riddle, because it's an aeronautical school.
Yeah, an engineering school.
So, does it lower the pool of players? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. There's other schools in Division III, RIT, always at the top. They're an engineering school. They've got a lot of different majors. My son went there. They got a lot of unique majors. I'm sure there's other majors also at Emory Riddle that can pull in. It's not just pure engineering that you can get it, but that is the, you want to go to Emory Riddle because of their aeronautics and their engineering. Same thing with like Florida Tech, right? You're going there mostly because of the tech part, not because of their history major or their economics major. So be interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right. Another classic game, Danny, always a classic matchup. Mercyhurst against Seton Hill. Number 13.
Oh my
Mercyhurst
God,
pulls two. It out 13-12. Did you watch this game?
I did not, but I want to watch it. I want to go on demand because they're always great games, those two teams.
Here's what I would say. First of all, snow and rain at Mercyhurst. Never got the field covered. It was mainly rain. But you could see in the camera shots now and then, it looked like sleet a little bit, just not fun weather. And it kind of was a game of runs that Mercyhurst started and Seton Hill could not close at the end. Mercyhurst goes up 3-1 after one. They were playing really well. They were playing fast and moving the ball really well in that first half. And they go up 5-1, but Seton Hill, and this is what's funny about this, Seton Hill's goalie was making stops, but the Lakers were getting like rebounds and scoring. So some of it was, you can't always say it was luck, but it was just kind of interesting. It was like almost like you would think, okay, they got the save, Seton Hill can come back. No, there's a rebound, score. But Seton Hill fights back, and after being down 5-1, they make it 5-3 at half. So they start to come back. Mercyhurst breaks it open to begin with in the second half. But once again, Seton Hill fights back, and it's 11-8 after three with Mercyhurst in the lead. And then Cage Williams of Seton Hill, he opens the scoring in the fourth to make it 11-9. My question right then is, can they get it under two? This is where they were having trouble, and they did. Braden Locke there gets a pass in the middle and puts it in the back of the net to move it to within one. But Ethan Lanimore, with a no-look finish, makes it 12-10 with 10:48 left. Lanimore scores again with 7:27 left to make it go back up to three goals. So there's a mini runs. And then Seton Hill starts scoring. And they get it with a Colin Soccer goal to within one with 20 seconds. When they got a goal at 2:20, and then 20 seconds later, Colin Soccer scores, so it's 13-12. So basically 2 minutes left and they're within one. And you're thinking, here we go. Seton Hill had the ball with 33 seconds left after a Mercyhurst shot clock violation. but they just couldn't capitalize. And that's how it ended.
Yeah.
That's another one. You know, it was, it's interesting. So here's the bottom line. Mercyhurst was always in the lead, and always seemed like it was two goals. And Seton Hill was just about climbing up, gunning close. And then Mercyhurst would score again, you know? So right. You almost, I think if you're a Mercyhurst fan, there's probably moments during that game, think, okay, we got this. And then a few minutes later, Seton Hill brings it within one. It was another classic matchup between these two. Mercyhurst, Ethan Lanimore had 3 goals, 2 assists, Chase Petchke, 2 goals, 2 assists, and Colin Tardif, 2 goals and 1 assist. And then the Seton Hill side, Carter Green, 2 goals, 2 assists, Colin Soccer, 3 goals, and Wade Brunell, 2 goals and 1 assist. So really close game, really fun to watch. I would recommend looking at it if you get a chance, because it's typical bad weather.
Yeah. You know what? The whole Northeast, like the last 2 weeks, has just been horrible. Yeah. Rain and just a lot of games and rain and snow and sleet. But you know what? Mercyhurst is 6-3. Seton Hill is 6-3. Mercyhurst now holds that little edge in conference. Mm-hmm. They hold that little edge in conference. I think Seton Hill's still a really good team. I think they'll probably meet each other again in the conference tournament again. It looks like, let's see if Seton Hill can pull off a win next time, because they seem to be just on the losing end, you know, too many times to Mercyhurst.
Well, that was it last year, but 2 years ago it flipped, right?
Right.
So I think this year, like we've seen in the NE10, like we've seen in so many other conferences, there's teams that are so close to each other and know each other so well. Right. Throw all the records aside. Like, it's going to be a close game, and it could go 1-1. You know, it's never going to be a total blowout. Like, it's never going to be like one team wins three games that year. It's going to be close. So
yeah. And like you said, they know each other. They play each other often enough. And yeah, always a good game between those two guys.
The last game I have on the list here, Danny, is St. A's against Bentley.
Did not see that game, Kev. There's too much going on this weekend.
St. Anselm pulls it out 17-8. I never would have guessed that. Bentley beat them, as you remember, beat them in their first game this year, but it was a non-conference game. And this counted in the conference records.
Yep.
And what's interesting is they both had carbon copy goals on both sides, with a dodge from Ekton and a wraparound goal from Kreese to make it 1-1. After one, St. A's is up 4-2, and Jackson Tinsley, the Falcons goalie, is keeping it close for them, because I think there's a lot of good ball movement on St. A's side. They got a lot of different things. Finally, it just broke out. St. Anselm took over control in the second quarter with checks, with rides to win the ball back, with face-off wins. They went on a 6-2 run to make it 10-4 at half. In fact, Danny, St. A's outshot Bentley 31-14 in the first half.
Jeez.
So it was just one of those games where St. A's basically won every quarter in the goal scoring. It was 12-5 after three. Bentley scores first in both the third and the fourth quarters, but St. A's always matched it, and they always, you know, seem to just get a little bit farther ahead. And then by the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, they had a 7-goal lead, and they were content to bleed that time down on every possession, you know, with a 7-goal lead. And so that's how it just became. And to be honest, in that, after Bentley's first goal in the fourth, they really couldn't generate anything on offense, even on man up. They just couldn't do it. And it was just almost a clinic by St. A's during this whole game, which that's what kind of surprised me, because Bentley beat St. A's. Bentley's a very good team. And St. A's just took this whole game over, controlled it both on the offense and the defensive side.
Yeah, and they dominated the faceoff because Cam didn't have the greatest game. He was only at 39%.
Which is another thing that surprised me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and he had a great game. He was 15 out of 22 for almost 70%. When they put Quinn Gannon in, he was 3 for 5. He was 60%. When they put Evans Pelane in, he won his faceoff 1 for 1. So, we had 4 kids going to take faceoffs, you know, so Cam was 7 for 18. Dalton McKinnon was 2 for 7. Spiro Maniatis was 0 for 2 at the X, and Jake Tyska was 0 for 1. So there's a big difference right there. You know, St. A's was getting a lot of offensive possessions.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're an offensive-oriented team, Kev, St. A's. They're an offensive-oriented team. They score, and they can score in bunches, and they have a lot of different guys that can score, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you just can't, like, lock yourself on Larson, because then Lombardi's going to get one, or Davis is going to grab one.
Or Andrews, right. The other Larson. Yeah,
right. Like, you just can't lock on one, so pick your poison with St. A's. I think St. A's is a really good team. I think they're going to be in the NCAAs. I think they're going to be tough in the NE10. You know, I think they're going to be a tough out for any team that plays them.
I agree.
The following segment of In the Crease is sponsored by LaxJobs.us. Find lacrosse jobs, find lacrosse people. LaxJobs.us is the number one source to browse and post lacrosse job opportunities on the web. If you're looking to work in lacrosse, at laxjobs.us, you can browse lacrosse job opportunities, upload a resume, create a seeker profile, and be seen by hundreds of potential employers. You can sign up for email job alerts as well. Are you looking to hire lacrosse people? At laxjobs.us, you can post a job to be released to a network of qualified job seekers. And the best part is that laxjobs.us is completely free to use. Our goal is simple, fill lacrosse roles with lacrosse people. Visit us today at laxjobs.us and follow us at laxjobs_ and join our community of professionals. Laxjobs.us. Find lacrosse jobs, find lacrosse people. Laxjobs.us.
All right, Danny, time to turn to the games to watch this week. Since we missed last week's episode, we typically try to even put in Wednesday games that are going to be out before the next episode drops. We weren't able to do that. So what's interesting is there are a lot of good games tomorrow night. We're recording this Tuesday, April 2nd, Wednesday, April 3rd. There's just a plethora, if I can use an SAT vocabulary word for you, a plethora of great games tomorrow. So let me start off with one that I think is really, really interesting. And that's Assumption against St. Michael's. Assumption's 5-1. St. Mike's is 5-2. Assumption beat Roberts Wesleyan. St. Mike's did not. This is a critical NE10 matchup for conference play.
Absolutely. It's a huge matchup
for them.
Assumption
that's
has been
gonna be a
quite,
game.
Quite the team this year. Who would have known? Who would have thunk, you know?
Well, we talked about it. We talked about what we thought at St. Mike's. Can they do what they did last year and bring back the magic? And they are. But the sleeper team, really, in the NE10, you got to point to Assumption.
Yeah, 100%. So that is a cool game. That's definitely got big implications there.
Yep.
And looking for that Lemoyne spot, you know?
They're
looking for that open NE10 spot now.
Yep. What else? What teams are there's other games that this Wednesday? What do you got?
There?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. What other games on tomorrow are you looking at?
Well, a top 20 matchup. Number 20 St. Leo faces number 18 Florida Southern at St. Leo. I think that's a big Sunshine State Conference game. They're both ranked. They're looking for conference spots for seeding. This is a big game in the Sunshine State Conference.
Right, Kevin. And Florida Southern coming off that loss to Emory-Riddle.
Yeah.
They don't want to lose again in the Sunshine State Conference. And St. Leo is playing really well.
Yeah, they lost 2 weeks ago, and then they came back and won last week. So I think that's going to be one of the better games this week. Too bad it's tomorrow, and then we're not going to know about it till Thursday.
I know. I know. Well, and here's another one. Talk about teams that are doing well in conference, but aren't doing that well overall. Belmont Abbey against Barton tomorrow night. Belmont Abbey is 6-5, but they've won 5 in a row. Barton is 5-6. Both are 3-0 in conference, just like Mount Olive. This game is at Belmont Abbey. This is critical because I think both of them are going to want to match up against Mount Olive too, because they've got to play them going forward. This is a big game in the conference.
I like the Crusaders tomorrow in that one. Belmont Abbey at home.
I think it's a pick'em game. I just don't know.
And then Barton has North Greenville on Saturday. That's another big Conference Carolinas game for both squads.
Conference Carolinas has been very tough to pick.
Gauge, right?
Yes. Perfect word. Another SAT vocabulary word. You got it right off the bat there, my friend. I got another one. Walsh Malone. Battle of Canton in the GMAC. Malone is 3-0 in conference play. Walsh is at 2-2. But Malone's never beaten Walsh. Of course, this is their second season, so they only have one real game to go into. And these are two young coaches trying to match wits with Slater against Campbell. This is going to be a good game.
I like Malone in this one. They've been playing well, actually really well.
Yeah, they have. They have. I think they have a good shot at beating Walsh this year. But Walsh beat them pretty handily last year. At least by 10 goals in last year's game.
It's a new chapter. Close the book on last year. We open up a new chapter this year. Now, that's always,
that'll be a good game. Battle of Canton. I love it.
The Battle of Canton. We don't talk about that too much either here as well.
Well, any other games tomorrow you're looking at?
No, that's about it. It's kind of like light week as far as big games.
Bentley Pace tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's a big game.
They both do not want to lose 2 in a row in conference play.
The top 20 matchup, number 13, Bentley, number 11, Pace.
Yeah, so all those games, by the time this podcast comes out, will already have been decided. So let's move on to games later on in the week that won't have been decided to give our listeners something to look forward to. Friday, 5 April, I've got CMU against CUI. It's the battle of the RMAC initials, Danny. Colorado Mesa against Concordia. Colorado Mesa owned them their last game. So, I'm just wondering, what did Concordia learn from that? What are they going to do? Interestingly, Concordia has to follow up this game with a game against Westminster on Sunday. So they go from Grand Junction, Colorado to Salt Lake. This is the travel tribulations of the RMAC.
Yep. And CUI is going to have a tough weekend because both of those teams are really, really good.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Colorado Mesa is very good, and Westminster has been playing really well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, what other games are you looking at?
That's it.
Let me run through some other ones for you, okay? Thomas More, Davis, and Elkins. A new program versus a rebuilding program, both in the GMAC. Thomas More is at 0-7, not starting off too well in their first season, understandably. Davis and Elkin is 4-7, but really they've beaten a lot of the new programs like Virginia State, Holy Family. They lost to Tiffin, though. So what can Thomas More do? I think it'll be interesting to see what Thomas More can bring against Davis and Elkin. Here are some other big games in my book. Lander Flagler on Saturday, April 6th. This is the championship rematch, Danny, from last year.
Yep.
Both lost last week to Peach Belt foes. And like we talked about just a second ago in the Bentley Pace game, neither one of these teams wants to go 0-2 in conference play. Right. That's going to be a really good game. And then the other one I've got is Lewis Maryville. on Saturday. This is another rematch. Maryville won the first one. This one's now at Lewis. Maryville
big game for both.
Maryville's at 8-2 and 1-0 in conference. Lewis is in 7-3 and 1-0 in conference. So the records are damn close. With Rockhurst beating UIndy, this is the match to stay even with the Hawks. Now, the Hawks are 3-0 in conference, so they're not going to be total numbers, but to be undefeated,
right,
to go up against Rockhurst, big, big game.
Yeah. You know, we're in the heart of conference play now, Kev. You know, a loss here, a win there could mean a spot, a seeding difference, a home game. It means a lot. These teams, now it's conference play, and it's got meaningful conference games. So it's going to be a good one. I agree with that one.
Howdy, folks. And this is the Game of the Week, brought to you by the Two Knuckleheads at In the Crease, bringing you the game that we believe is the best game in all of D2 lacrosse to watch this week. Barn burners, matchups, and implications. We bring it all here at the Game of the Week.
And hello, friends. Hello, friends. Hello, friends. Hello, friends.
All right, Danny, let's talk about our game of the week for this week. And the one we picked is number 18, Florida Southern against number 6, Rollins.
You know, Florida Southern coming off that stinging loss, but has been playing well. The Cardiac Kids of the South, right? One goal games. You know, Rollins losing the other night. You know, just this is a big, big, big game in the SSC. It really is. And it's a game that Florida Southern can win.
Yes. Yes. They got to play St. Leo like we talked about. They play them tomorrow. They play them Wednesday. And actually, Rollins is playing Lynn on Wednesday. So they both have games before they meet up on Saturday.
Yeah.
Neither one can look beyond their Wednesday matchup, though, in the Sunshine State Conference. So they're going to have a quick turnaround to play each other. They are playing at Florida Southern, correct?
Correct.
So that gives them a little bit of advantage there in their own home turf.
Yeah, Mikey Simone's got to come up big, and Jacob Chiz at the dot. You know, it gives him a real legitimate shot.
It does. Michael Simone does have to have a big game against their offensive firepower of Rollins, with John Stone, Hansen, Mikey Berkman, and then and he's got to match the saves of Shahi Ketchadorian.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy one, but it's a game that's winnable because they have Jacob Chiz. If you can win face-offs and get offensive, you know, Florida Southern moves the ball well. They're deep at midfield. They got good attackmen. They're a good squad, man. I wouldn't take them lightly.
You can't. You know? Because, look, we've seen Rollins in several games this year let teams stay in the game.
Look a little tight, right? Yep.
Like, they haven't played a full four quarters like they did against Adelphi when they beat them.
Right, exactly.
And if you give Florida Southern a quarter, if you give them some time, they can go for runs. It happened against Embry-Riddle. It can happen. And against other teams, they've gone on runs. So it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, Florida Southern's been going up and down a little bit. They went up to 12, 14, 16. They've been banging with that loss, dropped them to 18. But you know what? This should be a good game and a good game of the week pick for us.
All right, Danny, time for shout outs. What do you have?
Well, Kev, I only have one shout out. This is a good one. It has to go out to Willie Greco, attackman, Wingate Bulldogs, who stepped into number two all-time assist man in Division II. So it's a remarkable, remarkable thing. And I got to talk to Willie's dad. And I said to him, I said, you know, can we go on the record for the podcast? And he was like, sure, absolutely. And such a humble man.
He is. You know? He's a great guy.
So, you know, the first thing I said,
both Willie's parents are great, great people.
And I don't really know them that well. You have to be honest with you. I think this was maybe the second time I've actually met him, you know, and he's quiet, kind of stays by himself a little bit. And I went over and we started talking and I said, let me ask you a question. I said, and this is going to be on the record for the podcast. So, and I said, how does it make you feel as a dad to know that your son has been doing what he's been doing on the lacrosse field, setting records, setting NCAA records, attackman of the year, 2 years in a row in Division II, just like just the accolade, one after another, after another. How does that make you feel? And Kev, he looked at me and he had like a smile that was a humble, but like I had that smirk to him. He's like, it feels pretty damn good, he said. But he said it humbly. You know what I mean? Like he said it humbly.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what makes Willie so good? What did he do? Because you guys come from Georgia. And Georgia's not really a hotbed for lacrosse. And he said, well, originally, him and his wife are from, guess where?
Long Island.
Long Island. He moved to Georgia, and both him and his wife both started a boys and girls youth league in Georgia. So they took their Long Island lacrosse roots with them down to Georgia and helped start a youth program down there.
That's awesome.
His wife with the girls and him with the boys. Now, Willie's got an older brother, and his older brother, and Mr. Greco told me it was mostly indoor kind of stuff, you know, kind of box lacrosse at that time. And I was like, well, really blown away because so now it's box lacrosse in Georgia, you know? And he said, you know, Willie just excelled at the game right away from a very young age. And I said, well, what makes him different from everybody else? That he said to me, his work ethic. He said, at a young age, Willie was the last one on the field and the first one on the field. You'd always hear boom. What was that? Willie playing wall ball, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. You know, Willie outside, you know, shooting at the net. Willie going for runs. Willie hitting the gym. He said he was the hardest worker out of all of the kids that he coached, and his older brother too. He said, you know,
he has a twin sister too that plays at Lindenwood or played. I don't know if she's playing there this year. I don't know if she graduated or not, but talk about two talents.
Yeah. And, you know, and just to be able to talk to him about his son and all the accolades. And it was just a really nice conversation with Mr. Greco. He's a really nice guy. I had no idea that they were from Long Island. So now you start to see the correlation of lacrosse and then coming from Georgia. And then if you watch Willie Greco play, if anybody watches him play, it's a thing of beauty, folks. It's a thing of beauty.
His vision is the best in Division II, I think. He
doesn't make mistakes.
And his passes are so damn accurate.
He's just a phenomenal player to watch. I've been watching him. This is his fifth year. Been watching him since he's a freshman. And when he was a freshman, the first couple of games, he was just dishing out dimes. I was like, who is this kid? You know, where is he from? And he's from Georgia. What? You know, Georgia. What? This kid is amazing. So, again, I got to go at the Lenore Ryan game and saw some of the kids and some of the parents after the game. And Willie Greco came right over to me. Hey, Mr. Moran, how you doing? Shook my hand. And I was like, Willie, you're an amazing player, man. You're just so much fun to watch. And he's like, thank you. He's such a humble kid. My shout out goes out to Willie and his mom and dad and sister and family. Just just a great family and a great lacrosse family.
Really great shout out. I've got only one myself, and that's to our fans. I know we shout them out almost every week, but they always deserve it. You know, when we had to cancel the podcast and the episode last week, I wanted to let everyone know that would listen, because I've been there before and I listen to podcasts and it's a weekly podcast and it's not out. And I wonder why it's not out. So I wanted to put something out. I didn't know what to say. And I also didn't want to just say, we're not having the episode. I wanted to give some reason. The best I can come up with is a family emergency. The outpouring of prayers, well wishes, and thoughts astounded me. It really is a community. It's a lacrosse community.
We're reaching people, you know. And
I just want our fans to know that they lifted my spirits during that time. So
we have some good, we have great listeners. We really do. Kevin, to add another one, my good buddy Gerard Del Grosso texted me personally, was wondering what happened because his wife Jeannie is an avid listener. And when we didn't have a podcast and it was a family emergency, he thought it was on my side.
Yeah.
And he sent out a text. And thank you, Gerard, for sending that text. I explained to him what was going on. But his wife, Jeannie, is an avid listener, listens every week. Their kids at Limestone, balling out and winning games and getting ready to go to a national championship, I think. So, again, Kevin, you have a lot of people that care. They know what you do for Division II. They know what you do for this podcast. And it's only, you know, good people reaching out and sending their well wishes.
Well, thanks for that. And I just want to say that's a wrap.
It's a wrap, Kevin.